The headlines, the leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement warns Israel will not be allowed to mine a disputed maritime field unless Lebanon gets what it deserves. Ranil Wickremesinghe becomes Sri Lanka's new president days after Gotabaya Rajapaksa resigned amid protests over an unprecedented economic crisis. And also in our headlines, China accuses the United States of creating security risks in the Taiwan Strait after another U.S. warship sailed through the sensitive waterway. Our top story for this half hour, the leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says Israel will not be allowed to mine a disputed maritime field unless Lebanon gets what it deserves. Said Hassan Nasrallah said Lebanon doesn't want a war but will not permit the Israeli regime to violate Beirut's rights. He said the issue may cause frictions with an appropriate Lebanese response, but added that it's possible Israel will surrender even without a war. He underlined that Lebanon has given great concessions but has not achieved anything tangible yet. The Karish gas field in the eastern Mediterranean remains at the heart of the dispute between Lebanon and Israel. Hezbollah had previously warned that the Israeli regime will not be able to carry out any extraction operations before the dispute is resolved. Lebanon has dismissed Israel's claim that the field falls within the regime's so-called exclusive economic zone. The U.S. president, during his recent trip to West Asia, made an effort to form an anti-Iran alliance, but that did not go quite as planned. Iran reacted to the U.S. agenda, saying Joe Biden failed to form a military coalition against the Islamic Republic, as regional nations do not trust the U.S. anymore.
U.S. President Joe Biden just visited the West Asia to promote Washington's agenda in that region. Apart from encouraging Washington's Arab allies to pump more oil into the market to bring down rising energy prices, Biden, on behalf of the Israeli regime, was trying to form a coalition against Iran. But the much-publicized event failed to garner support from the United States' Arab allies. Now, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the latest plot in the West Asia region failed because the regional countries do not trust Washington. Kanani also said Iran considers the security of its neighbors as its own security.
The Saudis are recognizing the U.S. is in decline, and Joe Biden is the symbol of America's decline, mentally, politically, socially, religiously. And they have embarked on a different geopolitical, economic, military agenda, and that is to unite with the BRICS nations and seek their political destiny elsewhere than within the United States. So I think Joe Biden's trip was an absolute failure. It didn't accomplish anything, and we knew it wouldn't accomplish anything.
Just the day before the summit between Biden and the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council countries, plus Egypt, Jordan and Iraq, Mustafa al-Kadhimi, the Prime Minister of Iraq, said Baghdad will not be part of any camp or military alliance. He also said, quote, Iraq will not be a base for threatening any neighboring countries. The UAE, which is a close ally of both Saudi Arabia and the US, also dismissed the idea of forming an anti-Iran NATO-like military alliance. We are open to cooperation, but not cooperation targeting any other country in the region, and I specifically mention Iran. Such comments show that Biden, who has practically followed the anti-Iran policies of his predecessor Donald Trump, failed to achieve his stated objective of forming a military alliance against Tehran.
So this entire trip of Joe Biden's was a futile effort, wasted effort, and I think it only depreciated America in the eyes of other nations. And for that reason, other nations are seeking political alliances elsewhere in other global institutions, such as the BRICS nations and the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative and other things.
While the U.S. president was in Israel, the regime tried desperately to get the U.S. to change tactic and choose military action against Iran. However, that effort failed when Joe Biden said he would prefer diplomacy first in reference to the JCPOE revival talks. Israel, meanwhile, issued several military threats against Iran. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman described those threats as merely psychological warfare, saying the regime lacks the courage and strength to face Iran militarily.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman also dismissed the recent Israeli threats against the Islamic Republic as psychological warfare. Nasser Kanani says the Tel Aviv regime has neither the courage nor the capability to confront Iran militarily. He also vowed that Tehran would give a decisive and destructive response to any Israeli aggression. Iran's response to any idiocy committed by the Zionist regime would be destructive.
Not only is the United States incapable of any military conflict, but Israel is also incapable of any military conflict. And Israel is incapacitated, yet they are putting on an aura of functionality, an aura of threats. But at the heart, Israel has no capacity to wage a conflict against Iran. This is all bluff, and this trip confirms it.
Kanani's comments come in response to threats made by Israeli Army Chief Aviv Kohavi. The Israeli general has said, quote, "It's Israel's moral obligation to prepare a military response against Iran's nuclear program." He also added that such preparations for such a strike are at the center of the military's program. Kohavi's warmongering rhetoric against the Islamic Republic comes despite Iran's insistence that it's not seeking to develop nuclear weapons. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, has issued a religious decree against weapons of mass destruction. And just recently, Kamal Kharazi, the head of Iran's Strategic Council on Foreign Relations, rejected allegations that Iran seeks nuclear weapons. He said Iran has the technical capability to go beyond the current 60% uranium enrichment level, but it will not go that path. It's an open secret that Israel is the sole possessor of nuclear weapons in the region and has hundreds of warheads. The regime's officials have constantly threatened Iran with strikes on its nuclear facilities. The regime is responsible for the murder of a number of Iran's nuclear scientists. It has also carried out sabotage attacks against Iran's nuclear facilities. And its latest threats against Iran are just meant to shore up its crumbling hegemonic position.
Elsewhere, Iran's foreign minister says maintaining Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity is at the top of Iran's priorities. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks during a joint press conference with his Syrian counterpart Faisal Mehrdad. He underscored the importance of fighting terrorism for both countries. Elsewhere in his remarks, Amir Abdullahian said Iran understands Turkey's concerns about the presence of terrorist groups on its soil. He said the issue should be resolved via political means, and the Syrian foreign minister said Damascus is against the U.S. hegemony in the region. He said the Syrian nation will make any effort required to terminate the U.S. occupation. In Sri Lanka, incumbent Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe has won a parliamentary vote to serve the country for the next 5 years as president. Wickremesinghe won a three-way contest. That's a week after Gotabaya Rajapaksa was forced to resign and flee the country amid nationwide protests over an unprecedented economic crisis. In a speech following his election, Wickremesinghe said divisions are now over. He will take charge of a bankrupt nation that is in bailout talks with the International Monetary Fund. The island nation is in the grips of its worst crisis in over seven decades, facing severe shortages of food, fuel, and medicine. Wickremesinghe is also widely despised by the protesters who see him pursuing the policy of the former president. New protests are underway outside the parliament building. Well, joining us now from Colombo, we have Executive Director of the National Peace Council of Sri Lanka, Mr. Jehan Pereira. Sir, welcome to the program. Walk us through the recent turbulence, political turbulence that we've been seeing in Sri Lanka. And in your opinion, is it far from over now?
The protests against the government commenced about a year ago when the then president made a very incorrect decision to save on scarce foreign exchange dollars by banning the import of chemical fertilizer. He also justified it on the ground that chemical fertilizers cause harm to people, and therefore we should go in for organic farming, 100% organic farming. And our presidency is so powerful that he was able to impose this on the parliament and on the people in general. So the farmer protests started at that time. Subsequently, because of the shortage of dollars, foreign exchange, there was also a period of enormous power cuts, where for 13 hours a day, there was no power. Right now, I'm speaking to you, we are now in the midst of a power cut, but these are only for 2 to 3 hours, not 13 hours. So these 13-hour power cuts infuriated people who started gathering in their localities. This was then followed by a shortage of petrol and diesel for vehicles. And initially, it meant that we had to stay in line for 3-4 hours. Today, we are in line for 3-4 days. And the lines in front of the gasoline gas stations can exceed 3 to 5 kilometers. So this is the extent of the economic problems we are facing. And in that context, people said that the government must go because they saw that the government had mismanaged the economy. And apart from that, they also felt that the government leadership in particular had robbed the country of its dollars.
And Mr. Pereira, the question is right now, has selection of a new president, Ranil Wickremesinghe, will that appease the protesters, or are they adamant to see more change than what's already happened?
Now, there are two elements to the protest movement. One is the hardcore group of protesters who have been camping daily for the past 4 months. They are young people. They are more from a leftist background. They are university students. And they are insisting that the newly elected president should step down, because they feel that this election is not a legitimate one. It is by a parliament elected 3 years ago who have lost their mandate because of their misgovernance of the country. But this parliament has now elected a new president. However, I believe that because the new president is indeed a man of great experience. He has been prime minister 6 times on 6 previous occasions, including this one. And he is a very cultured man, very well educated, knows the ways of the world, negotiates and is a good negotiator. They feel that he might be able to, now that he's president, make a change. So I think the bulk of the people who also join the protest movement, when they are called upon and when they feel it's necessary, will want to give the new president a chance.
All right, thanks a lot. Jehan Pereira joining us from Colombo. Moving on, China has denounced the sailing of yet another U.S. warship through the Taiwan Strait, saying the move undermines peace and stability. The Chinese Army, in a statement, said it monitored the warship and issued warning. The statement accused the U.S. of frequent provocations and called it a creator of security risks in the Taiwan Strait. The U.S. Navy claimed, however, that its destroyer, USS Benfold, conducted a routine transit in accordance with international law. Just a week ago, the same destroyer twice sailed through the disputed South China Sea. The U.S. has been carrying out such voyages regularly. China, which claims Taiwan as its own territory, blames the U.S. for interfering in the island's affairs. Beijing is also angry over Washington's growing military and diplomatic ties with the self-ruled island. And as the race to decide who will be the leader of Britain's ruling Conservative Party drags on, heated debates and hard campaigning have exposed deep divides within Tory ranks. Many are now wondering if the Conservatives can fix Britain's many economic woes when they can't seem to mend their own damaged ties. Robert Carter reports from London.
As temperatures in Britain soar, the race for the next Conservative Party leader is also heating up. Following further eliminations, now only three candidates remain. On Monday, Tom Tugendhat was eliminated during the third round vote, whilst Kemi Badenoch went out in the fourth. Rishi Sunak remains in the lead. Penny Mordaunt is close in second place, followed by Liz Truss. However, as the fight intensifies, things are turning bitter, with attacks on policy, along with accusations of ideological treachery, leading to candidates refusing to appear on future televised debates. Pundits believe the divisive race has exposed deep-rooted splits in the ruling party at a time when Britain faces numerous economic crises.
A senior Conservative journalist said to me that he found the entire leadership campaign wholly depressing. He thinks that it's been a competition to be negative. He thinks it's a race to the bottom in terms of showing what's wrong with the others rather than what's right with themselves. And crucially, we see a party divided. It seems to me that the Conservatives are going through an identity crisis, perhaps partly caused by Boris Johnson, who is a populist, without a very clear philosophy. Now, the next leader has to refocus the Conservatives on its more traditional values.
There can be little doubt in Rishi Sunak achieving a place in the final round, as he only requires five more supporters in order to achieve that place. However, the real battle will be over who joins him in second place. Two candidates will last into the final round, and then, of course, it goes to the votes from the Tory party membership to decide who the next leader of the party, and therefore the country, will be. Robert Carter, London.
And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
سی و دو
چومن
یعنی
بازار
Historically, humans lived a colourful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle. But what brought humans into the valleys and grasslands, and later into a collective society? Some argue wheat domesticated mankind, settling humans permanently next to their fields. Humans have come a long way from traditional farming. Presently, some 38% of the Earth's surface is used to cultivate crops. Technology has revolutionized agricultural production, leading to more food security worldwide.
Oh, hello there. Welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This time we will explore the agriculture industry in a two-part series. The first part shines the spotlight on the marriage between technology and science for high-yield agricultural productions. The second part focuses on livestock husbandry. We wanted to see how the agricultural sector is developing new ways to increase the efficiency of natural resource use while also elevating the quality of cultivated food. Well, let's not waste any time. Let's walk through the fields of today's bazaar.
Our quest for answers led us to a company in Khorasan Razavi province that specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechie, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini-tubers. So what is a mini-tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production.
You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a solace system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production.
As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received three consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production.
This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress.
36 نفر از پرسنل ما دارای مدرک تحصیلی بالای کارشناسی ارشد هستند و اینها خیلی کمک ما میکنند در پویایی این مجموعه. به همین ترتیب تمام مجموعه ها افرادی رو از ابتدا شروع کرده تربیت کردن و تحصیل کردن در این مورد و تک تک افراد از ابتدا روی رشته خاص خودشون کار میکردن. از قبل از دیپلمشون برای این کار تأیید شده بودند و تونستند دوره دکتراشون رو در رشته‌ای بگیرن که مورد نظر مجموعه بوده و موضوع گزارششون رو مجموعه براشون تعیین کرده که این گزارش رو این رشته رو بخونن.
As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products.
The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy.
Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same two-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are two of the major culprits of reduced production.
Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons. However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace. The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion, meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
In case you didn't know, and most don't actually, the country is home to more than 7% of global mineral reserves. That's significant. With over 80 different types of minerals, Iran is one of the top 10 mineral-rich countries globally. In total, the country has about 60 billion tons of proven mineral reserves, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world.
The mining ministry says the total production value in this sector is over $700 billion. This value has not been unnoticed by the government, which has been seriously pursuing several programs promoting the mining sector. Despite its enormous riches, Iran has yet to unlock its full potential as this key sector is still struggling to operate at full capacity. There are several reasons for this. One is a lack of necessary machinery and equipment for expanding this industry. So the government is focusing on geological exploration, extraction, and research of new products as part of areas for development. Another one of the government's programs to increase production is to increase mineral extraction. So organizations have embarked on reviving idle mines. Out of 10,000 mines in the country,
around 4,000 of them are idle. It's noteworthy that over the last 2 years, some 500 small-scale idle mines have been brought back to life. That's based on the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization. One of the benefits of the ongoing revival plan has been the rise in nationwide employment. Presently, well over 100,000 miners are at work in the sector.
Mining in Iran has more work to be done, and it's still under development. Still, there are plenty of doers in this country, and plenty more waiting for further investment opportunities. Iran's productions by far outweigh its domestic use, leaving lots of room for mineral exports. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact.
Figures from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show a record high of nearly $12 billion worth of minerals and mining products were exported last year. This means there was roughly an 80% increase in exports year on year. Championing the export list in terms of value were steel ingots and related products, copper, aluminium, zinc, and iron. This is a pretty big growth spurt, actually. But government officials say export figures could be much higher if raw materials and other mining products could be further developed with added value. So, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized products in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. The current Iranian calendar year slogan was knowledge-based production and job creation. The title was given by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The goal is to promote and increase support for companies that engineer and produce advanced products that contribute to the economy.
Well, it's that time of the show where I should step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague is actually out there on the field. So, let's see that report.
In the modern world today, both industrialized and developing countries have modern installations capable of highly efficient fabric production. In addition to mechanical improvements in yarn and fabric manufacture, there have been rapid advances in the development of new fibers, processes to improve textile characteristics, and testing methods allowing greater quality control. Today, we visited Aram Takmil Teyfe Faro's company, active in the textile industry in Iran. In this company, there are various activities such as processes of weaving, dyeing, and finishing, and printing of different types of textiles while employing the strongest technical staff as well as modern European dyeing and finishing machines to finally meet customer satisfaction with quality products and innovations. Iran's textile industry has a capacity to produce a wide variety of products suitable for different market segments, both within Iran and across the world. Over the past years, close to 30,000 tons of different types of textile were imported. Presently, however, there are 78 textile factories active in the country, producing 90 million square meters of different kinds of fabric every year. Iran's Development Plan Vision 2025 has identified textile and clothing as one of the potential industries for expansion. The plan basically emphasizes on the need for technological advancements and improvement in productivity.
Many thanks for that awesome adventure, as always. Now, it's time to dive right into some of the latest developments and trends in Iran's agriculture industry. One trend is Iran's agriculture sector. It's a shift towards greenhouse cultivations. Now, a young entrepreneur from Khorasan-Razavi province has engineered aeroponic cultivation towers, which can potentially save the country millions on imports.
It is basically an advanced form of hydroponics used in greenhouses. These are vertical circular structures with several openings where plants are placed nutrient-rich liquid, so they efficiently grow more colourful, tastier and more nutritious produce.
Staying on the topic of trends, farmers have forever battled pests, and some have found better ways to coexist with nature while raising produce. One way is to fight bugs with bugs. A young entrepreneur is marketing his bugs to farmers to reduce pesticide use.
This product is in fact a bunch of tiny insects that are natural predators of certain farm pests that are usually controlled with insecticides. The developers say these creatures only live for a few days, so they don't pose a threat to the natural ecosystem of farms.
Well, that brings us to the end of this edition. I'm Samson Sees. Sees you soon.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Here, when we're talking about nature, we're talking about respect, we're talking about honor, we're talking about responsibility, accountability, we're talking about amana, we're talking about something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has placed on this earth for a reason, and we're talking about us representing all of these things in the best way possible. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi says, if you plant a tree and a bird eats from that tree, then that is considered to be a form of sadaqah. Let's read out the points that Sheikh Jawadi mentions as far as the qualities or the positive benefits of planting and respecting trees and also honoring forests. It's going to be a form of halal rizq. It's going to be a form, as we just mentioned, of sadaqah. It will be a way of us bringing about sustenance. It will be a way of assisting us as a reward in our grave as well. Important thing is that there is a collective responsibility other than an individual responsibility for us to honor and respect our environment, nature, in this particular topic, trees and forests. Many, many ahadith speak about how recommended it is for you to plant a tree. Just imagine, you chop down one tree, but you plant five in its place. It's going to be a form of sadaqah. It's going to help you in barzakh. It's going to help you on judgment day. It's a way of you repaying back to nature and all these other wonderful things that you're doing. And it might not cost you a lot of money as well, but you are giving back to nature, with it, which is a wonderful thing. And most importantly, remembering that the art, the skill that we need to adopt, that we need to promote in our society, is not only to respect the nature in that sense, but keep nature clean and never allowing ourselves to contribute towards polluting nature.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih al-Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
When we spoke about trees and forests, I left out an important piece of information that we also needed to discuss, which Sheikh Jawadi also mentions, and that is the importance of having parks, park facilities, and anything to do with having outside kind of entertainment, natural entertainment. And there are, of course, many things that we are able to gather from verses from the Holy Quran and also a hadith from Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam that speak about how these open public areas or natural wildlife or rainforests, reservations, parks, these kind of things that, you know, the public would be able to use for the purpose of getting close to nature. These are very important things for the purpose of entertainment, for the purpose of whatever it may be. Very, very important thing that must have been mentioned. I should have mentioned it in the previous episode. Anyway, continuing on, when it does come to the importance of air, importance of oxygen, how necessary it is for us to make sure that we breathe fresh air. That's why, you know, if you're living in congested area, in a maybe polluted city, it's always good every once in a while for you to go out and enjoy the breeze of fresh air in rural areas. And remembering the ni'mah Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us through fresh air. And rain is also something that is important, even though we discussed water in detail. But when it does come to something like rain and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sending it down to us, it is a blessing, it is a ni'mah. Rain not only cleans the environment, but also gives us that most pure, most clean of source of H2O, of water, and air as well, of course. When it comes to the issue of droughts, and we spoke about sin before, and we spoke about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala testing us in different ways, it's not something new, it's not a new phenomena. But here I'd like to mention what Imam Ali alayhi salam says about rain and it becoming scarce. He says, إِذَا جَارَ الْحَاكِمْ جَوْر means ظُلْم, means oppression. If a ruler becomes oppressive, قَلَّ الْمَطَرْ rain will become scarce. Imam Rida alayhi salam, he says, إِذَا كَذَبَ الْوُلَاتْ حُبِسَ الْمَطَرْ if rulers or if officials in the ruling system lie, then rain will not be sent down. And of course, this means that there's going to bring about drought and all of the other, you know, bad things that come along with a drought. Now, when we talk about water, we talk about the benefits of rain, and we talk about how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has blessed us with rain and how it itself is a ni'mah. There's also all of those things that we can speak about as far as the ad'iyah and the a'mah, the supplications and the deeds that one can do for requesting of ghayth, for requesting of rain. And there are many common etiquette that can be observed for that. Further on to that, we can see how wonderful it is for us to relate to water as far as the sea, as far as ocean, as far as rivers, as far as lakes, as far as dams, whatever it is. You need to have quick access to water, not only for issues of tahara and najasa and drinking, but also for the benefit that water has, for food, for, you know, the sea life that it has as a supply for us, and also for swimming purposes, for entertainment, for sports, and everything else. So because of the many benefits that it has, we need to make sure that we take care of it. And that's why, you know, a whole segment Sheikh Jawadi mentions about how important it is for us to avoid polluting the water and the seas and the ocean and the rivers and the lakes in every way, in any way, and to keep it as clean as possible. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.